class, we're getting 1.5 hours break. So I'm very thankful to really. We asked him, we said we can have 1.5 hours for our class. He said, okay. Because he's got right across the street. I was like, neighbor. Oh, boy. It's going since 6 a.m. Yeah, and a big party. They fed about 1,000 people in the neighborhood. Big feeding. All the way to Calvert Boys burned up. This thing is really fancy.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Ritam Tam Sajivan Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Ritamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Dapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishri Vishabana Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Manchakobudriyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Patitana Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. So this is Gopastami. Radharani will show her lotus feet tonight, I believe so. Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan, and Radhakund, and maybe also at Govindakund. You stay there, no? Radharani should show her feet, and she's dressed up as a coward boy. Sometimes, I don't know if it's just shows her feet or whether she's also dressed up as a coward boy. She must be dressed up as Subal Sukhav maybe tonight. Because today's the day Krishna goes out. He's in Chatikar in Boma Vrindavan. He left Gokul and he came to Chatikar at the age of about 3. And then he stayed in Chatikar, which is, this road is called Chatikar. And the village is Ral in Chatikar. He stayed there for about 3 years, maybe 4. Till he was 7, and then at 7 he moved to Nandagam and stayed till he was about 10.5 and went to Mathura. So on this auspicious day in Kartik, Radharani's month, Krishna entered his Pogonda Lila and celebrated that by taking the cows out. He got the name Gopal and started to take out the cows without any outside of the village, so he could wander here and there, and it made it very convenient for him to meet with the gopis, young gopis, 5-year-old gopis. They were 5 and he was 6. And then the Rasa dance, Krishna was 8 and they were 7. It's told in Bhagavatam. Very sweet. So how can there be any impropriety? An 8-year-old boy. And of course, there's other descriptions of how that young people can mature at a very fast rate and whatnot. Exalted people mature at a rate 1.5 times normal, so they quote that in reference to Krishna's Leela when he was 8 years old. Actually, he had the maturity of a teenager, beginning teenager. So in this Tritiyam Sarana, discussing Trinadapi Sunichena, Taror Iva Sahishnanat. This phrase in the verse is the second quality, describes the tolerance, more tolerant than a tree. This is the second quality that we have to develop in order to chant without offenses and free from anarthas. When it becomes steady, in Krishna's service, we have to be very tolerant and develop the qualities of tolerance. And Krishna will help us in so many ways. The environment that we live in will help us. The people we associate with, they will help us. The circumstances that we face with those people in that environment will also help us develop tolerance. And it's highly recommended to live in India because the another second name for India is Tatikshava Desh. Desh means country and Tatikshava means tolerance. Tatikshava Kurunika Srida Sarvadehinam. This, if you don't have tolerance, if you're very intolerant, then it's highly recommended come and live in India. And either you'll die because of your intolerance, or you'll develop lots of tolerance. This is certainly a land where your tolerance will be tested. And tempered. This is how they make steel very strong. They say tempered steel. They heat the steel and then they put it in cold water. Then they heat it again in high temperatures and put it in cold water. And with each heating and each cooling, the steel becomes harder and harder, more and more firm. So we in India, we get in many heated situations. We get very hot-headed. But then if we bathe our hot head in the cooling waters of Srinam, then we can become, our tolerance can develop. Otherwise, we may blow our stack, as they say. I remember I was with some devotees in Jaipur. They were managing over there. One devotee from Australia. He had been there for a few years. And I told him, I think you've reached the end of your tolerance level. I think it's time to return to Australia. Because he had so many verses and shloka. You can sit here. This is all empty and everyone's sitting on the steps. There's a big seat here. Some people like the steps, but it's more of So this is tolerance. India is the land of tolerance. So we can develop this quality. Once Achyutananda was in, he was serving Prabhupada in his 1970s in Bengal, Calcutta, Mayapur, and South India also. He wrote Prabhupada a letter and he said, "Listen, Srila Prabhupada, please let me go back to America, especially New York." He wanted to go to New York. Because he's from New York. And he said, "I've had enough of India, or India's had enough of me," or whatever. And Prabhupada wrote a letter, you can see in the folio, to Achyutananda. He said, "You should understand that 1 year of service, 1 year of service in India is equal to 10 years of service in the West." What the ramifications of that statement are, that's up to you to interpret in your own way. Because Prabhupada's basic intention was that whatever advancement, and in other words, if you stay and serve in India for 1 year, because he wanted to serve in the West, Prabhupada was inducing and encouraging him to stay in India and serve, and showing them the comparative benefits. If you serve in India for 1 year, you'll get the same sukriti, blessings, benefits, advancement, improvement, devotional enhancement that you would receive by serving 10 years in America or the West. So we have to consider that there must be some special intensity about India. Intensity of sweetness and an intensity of bitterness. It's very, very sweet, and it's also very, very bitter. And sometimes people that live here for some time, they get exasperated time to time, and they say, "Oh, India." Winston Churchill in England, 1940s, he coined a phrase when the Germans were dropping bombs down the throats of the Englishmen at a rapid rate, and the Englishmen were having bombs for lunch, from German bombs, and they were feeling extremely distressed. And he coined this phrase, "Oh, England, with all thy faults, how I love thee." because people didn't have any food, and it was they were at war with Germany, and they weren't doing so well in the beginning. So he was trying to say, anyway, it's difficult, and we have no food, and our heads are getting bombed on every night. But it was all thy faults. So India is like this. India, with all thy faults, I love you. Because, and then sometimes people, they ask us, they say, oh, you're in India for so many years, so you must like India very much. How do you like India? I say, I hate India. I don't like India at all. I said, if Vrindavan and Mayapur and Jagannath Puri were located in Russia, I would live in Russia. If Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri and Mayapur were located in Iran, then I would live in Iran. But somehow or other, they appear to be located in what is called the Indian subcontinent, and it's really sub. it's ultra sub. sub means low, and below in Nietzsche. So it's really, the subcontinent, and that's where you learn to develop these sublime qualities of tolerance. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, comments on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's rather appropriate analogy to describe the quality of tolerance. He immediately invokes the image of a tree, which is universally witnessed by everyone. In every land and every place, everyone has seen a tree and experienced the qualities of a tree. They're quite self-evident and manifest for all to see in the winter and the summer. So the nature of the tree, it's worth studying, as our Avadhut Brahman tells us in 11th canto, Dattatreya's teachings, that we can learn so much by studying nature, the nature around us, the nature of our own body. We can learn a lot about the Absolute Truth just by introspection and study. So similarly, the tree is a great teacher for those on the path of bhakti. The tree is one of our gurus. Shri tree. Guru tree. One of our Shiksha gurus. We're making some humor, but it's actually a fact. We want to learn something. We can learn something from the dog. We can learn something. The dog is very faithful to its master. So we also have a master. So we should be faithful. Whether the master kicks us or feeds us or pets us or insults us or says, you stupid dog. And dog doesn't know what he's saying because the dog doesn't know English. But he has some idea that maybe the master's not pleased. So, but he continues to serve the master. So we learn that quality. And also the dog also teaches another quality, how to be satisfied with very little. The dog gets a lot or gets nothing, it will carry on, and whether its belly is empty or full. So whether a disciple is getting all kinds of praises and recognition or acknowledgement, or whether he's getting totally ignored or even abused, he'll carry on. So like this, we can learn from the tree. The tree is so tolerant that it does not neglect to offer its shade and sweet fruits, even to a person who comes to cut down the tree. The devotee of Krishna does good to everyone, friend and enemy alike. For example, even people are envious and we're distributing books somewhere, and people try to break up the sales or they speak badly about us. But when it comes to, if we have some prasadam and someone, and we have some prasadam and we're distributing prasadam and that person comes by, we don't think, oh, he's a nasty person, he was bad to me, he tried to break up the sales of Prabhupada's books and he said so many bad things to me. Well, oh, please take prasadam. We tolerate whatever he said, we don't mind. Still, we offer him the fruits. He cut us down. He cut down the tree of our body. He cut down the tree of our fame. He cut down the tree of our honor with so many crude words. But yet we still continue to offer him the fruits. The fruits are the opportunity to serve Krishna, to give him prasadam. So here, please take prasadam. I don't want that. What's that? And then we keep offering. And then at some point, generally, they say, oh, okay, put it on the table. We used to have, I remember on Sankirtan, we were distributing books in front of one store every day on the sidewalk because it was legal. And every day this man would come out from a store, "Get away from here! Don't do that here!" And we'd say, we do an Indian program. We'd say, "Yes, yes, yes." And go down a little bit, and then he would go back in the store, and then we'd come back, because that was a good part of the sidewalk, big store. And he would come out, and then every week on Friday, we would just go to all the businesses on that street and distribute prasadam, some cookies or something they could appreciate to their palate. And generally, all the workers were young people in the stores, and they would take the cookies, and they liked us rather. So we would go store to store, and then that same man, we'd say, "Would you like some cookies?" "No. What are you doing?" And he would tell the workers, "Don't take those cookies." And they would tell him, they said, "You can't tell us. We can take cookies." And I mean, there's no law about accepting cookies from someone. So, and then that would go on several times. And then he would say, "No, no." And then I remember one time we would keep offering him prasadam, a chance to contact Krishna in a favorable way. And then he said, "Oh, leave it on the counter." In the store, they have a counter. So he left it there. And then later when the young people got off work, they came over and said, "Hey, guess what? The old man took some cookies. He took some cookie prasadam." So the devotees, they tolerate, but they give the fruits. They don't have any envy for anyone. They don't harbor any grudges. They tolerate anything and continue to give the mercy. So like the tree, the devotee of Krishna does good to everyone, friend and enemy. Everyone's a friend of the devotee. Sridam Sarvadehinam. Kapila Muni tells in third canto, Suridam Sarvadehinam. The Surid means heart. Surid means heart. I am heart to heart with everyone. The devotee is heart to heart friend with everyone. Sarvadeha. Everyone. Wherever the Atma may find itself, if the Atma finds itself in the body of a horse or a pig or a dog or any type of vulgar creature, or to speak of human being, the devotee is friendly. He's heart-to-heart friendly. Suridam. Because there's different words for friend in Sanskrit. There's mitra, bandhu. We have dinabandhu, friend of the fallen, friend of the poor. And bandhu. Bandhu means just like social friend. But mitra is a name for the sun. A mitra is like a well-wishing friend who specifically does something good to us. Because the sun is called mitra. The sun is very friendly to everyone. Gives sunshine. So he's specifically giving goodness to all of us. But then Bandhu is like social friend. He may do good or not, but we have friends with him, Bandhu. But then there's Surid. And that Surid, Riddhi means heart, and Surid means deep heart, or very heartly, your heartly friend. So this is what Kapila Muni is describing, the qualities of the sadhu to his mother, so she can understand what are the saintly, what are the lakshana, the qualities, characteristics of a sadhu to Tikshva. And the first thing he mentions to Tikshva, Karunika Surida Sarvadehinam Ajata Shatrava Santo Sarva Sarabhushana. It's in third canto Bhagavatam. To Tikshva Karunika, that firstly and foremost, the sadhu is very, very tolerant. Very tolerant. He's just like, there's like two trees, there's two types of trees. Like we say, not only is a devotee more tolerant than a tree, but even you can get into specific trees. Because there's different, some trees are more tolerant than others. For example, if you take the coconut palm, the palm tree is extremely tolerant. No matter how many fruits are hanging from it, it doesn't break. No matter how much the wind is blowing, the wind may be blowing with a tufan or typhoon, and it's funny because in English we say typhoon, and then Hindi they say tufan. There's a train it's really, really slow train, extremely slow train, which goes from Mathura to Calcutta. It's called a Tufan Express. I don't know if anyone's ever been on it. And tufan means typhoon, means tornado, means like super fast. It means 200 kilometer an hour winds. That's a Tufan. So I think they're making a good joke. They call it Tufan Express, and it goes about 2 kilometers per hour. It takes like 36 hours to go, 500 kilometers or something. So Typhoon Tufan. So when the typhoon or cyclone is blowing with incredible winds, the coconut tree just leans back, like this. Very tolerant, just tolerates all the wind, just bends back. But there's another type of tree that grows in more cooler climates, the walnut tree, the oak tree or the walnut tree. They say akrod in Hindi, I think it's akrod is walnut, akrod. And they're very stout and strong, the old tree is standing very straight. And very roots are very deep in the ground, big branches. Then when the tufan comes or the wind blows, and he doesn't want to give, he doesn't want to bend. Hey, I'm oak tree. What are you doing? And the wind's blowing and blowing. He's saying, yes. It's like Dr. Frog kind of. He's like, he stands there and the wind keeps blowing, blowing. He says, hey, what are you trying? You're trying to push me? You can't push me. And the wind says, oh yeah. And all of a sudden, poof. And the tree gets uprooted. 200-year-old tree, 300-year-old tree gets completely knocked down by the wind if it's powerful enough. And all his roots come belly up and he's completely knocked out. He's finished by that. Like a TKO by the wind. He's knocked out. Because he wasn't tolerant. He wasn't tolerant. His pride was such, oh, you think you're challenging me? You're insulting me with your winds? You can't. Come on. You can't do that. He wouldn't bend. He wasn't flexible. The coconut tree is very flexible. So we should be like, the analogy is like a tree, the tatikshva, the primary or first quality that Kapila mentions of a devotee is tatikshva karunika, then we should remember the tolerance of the coconut tree. The wind is blowing, okay, go with the flow, bend with the wind. Tolerate everything to the maximum extent. Because Brahma, Lord Brahma is telling also in this Bhajan Mahasyan, there's verses from Brahma, but he's saying that, he says that this is all my vipakam, anything that happens to me. Tateno kampam shushimik shimano banjana evatmana kritam vipakam. Kritam vipakam. I've done so many bad deeds, so the environment is reactionary towards me. The environment or the people in the environment, they're coming at me with anger or abuse or insult or injury. So I tolerate it. I will tolerate it all. Rig Vag Bhapabira Vidadan Namaste Jivetiyo Mukti Sadeva Dayabak. Sadayabak. Then if I tolerate at the same time with my Vidhi, with my heart, with my words, Vacha, Rig Vag, Vag is words, Rig Vag Bhapabira, Vapu. Vapu means Tanu or Sharir. With my body, Namo Namaste, I will continue to pray to the Lord and serve the Lord and tolerate everything. And what will happen to me? Jivetu Yomuti Sadayavak. I will inherit the kingdom of God. I will go to Vaikuntha. So completely free from envy. So in other words, if one is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is seeing a correlation between tolerance and envy. If someone is completely tolerant, then they tolerate their position, they tolerate whatever they have, and they never feel that someone has more than me. I become intolerant of someone else's position or their qualities or their attainments, and therefore I become envious. So he says, one who's tolerant, he becomes completely free from envy. And this is one of the second symptom of one doing nam bhajan. So the thoughts of an offenseless chanter. This is how an offenseless chanter thinks. In other words, one who's actually chanting without offense, he will have the four qualities that are described in Trinadapi Sunichina verse. He will have those qualities. He will display those qualities. These will be his sadabhushanam, his ornaments. Like we mentioned, we wear earrings or we wear nose ring or finger ring or necklace, bracelet or watch. These are like ornaments. Some are functional. So the devotee who is chanting without offense, then he will have these devotional, the ornaments of a sadhu, of tolerance, humility, and respecting all and pridelessness. You'll have no pride. And this will be the thinking. Oh, my Lord, my friends and family are all unfortunate conditioned souls. How can they become attached to your holy name? They are filled with anarthas and bound by thick ropes of unlimited desires for material enjoyment. They are busily engaged day and night seeking happiness from wife, children, property, and wealth. Whatever fleeting pleasure they get ultimately leads to suffering. How will such persons develop the desire to realize their eternal spiritual form? Speaking thus, this is speaking or thinking, speaking thus, the humble and tolerant sadhaka begins to sing in a loud voice, Hari Nam, Hari Nam, Hari Nam, Eva Kevalam. So someone who's humble and submissive, humble and tolerant, he also, it's implied here, because the tree analogy is there, Lord Chaitanya, who also explains that he's tolerant, he tolerates any kind of insult, but he gives his fruits. So implied in this quality of tolerance is also the quality of compassion, because that's the quality the tree is embodying. Tolerance, and at the same time, compassion. Oh, you're coming, I'm tolerating, you're coming to cut my branches down. Anyway, I will not protest. You take my branches, and here, take my ripe fruits. My fruits are ripe, please take them. So there's tolerance and compassion, or kind of goes side by side in the Gaudiya conception. Outside of the Gaudiya conception, there may be the idea of tolerance as a religious quality. Certainly you'll see that in the lives of Christians and whatnot. But Lord Chaitanya, especially in his own commentary in this verse, which we read in Auntie Leela, he's emphasizing this quality that the tree is tolerant but giving. So we are also tolerant but compassionate, and our compassion is expressed by preaching, giving the holy name to others. That's why the humble and tolerant devotee who has attained a level of nishtha, the quality that comes at the level of nishtha is also compassion for others. Before nishtha, we're so busy battling our own wars that we can't think about anybody else's problems. It's just like if you're in your boat and you're out in the ocean, all kinds of holes start sprouting in your boat, and you're so busy, because if you don't plug up the holes in your boat, then your boat will sink. So you're busy plugging up the holes. And even though nearby you there's other boats that are sinking and other people calling for help, you can't even hear them because you're busy trying to save your own boat. And once you plug the holes in your boat and everything is secure, then you look and say, oh, well, these other boats, they're sinking. Hey, come in my boat. Come in my boat. My boat is safe now. It's secure. It's not sinking. Come, your boat is sinking. Come take shelter. So anartha nivritti is like the man worried about the holes in his boat. He can't really have much of a mood of compassion because he's too busy trying to keep himself from drowning in the sea of anarthas, the Bhava Sagar. But when he reaches the shore of nishtha, he dries out a little bit. He dries out in that warm sun and lies on the hot sand of the beach and feels a sense of relief and regains his energy. Then he looks around when he's on the beach and he says, well, wait a minute, I was saved. I'm on the beach of nishtha. Holy name has delivered me. Sri Namprabhu is as great lifeguard. He has swum out into the ocean of anartha nivritti and held me by the neck and dragged me across the ocean of anartha nivritti and taken me to the safe shore of nishtha. Now I'm situated in steadiness, and he's blessing me with these qualities of humility and tolerance. And now as I become humble and as I become tolerant by the mercy of Namprabhu, I see, oh, others are also drowning. I don't know if I have the power to swim in that ocean of anarthas, but at least I can throw a rope from the shore. At least let me stand on the shore and throw a rope. Hey, listen, and with a little flotation ring around it, like a lifesaver, they call it, type thing. And I throw that out, like a piece of cork or something. I throw that out in the water as far as my power of bhajan allows me. 1 meter or 1 kilometer, I throw the rope out and say, hey, anyone out there drowning, hold on. And then you start pulling. And so this is called Madhyam Kanishta Adhikari. That at the level of Madhyam, begins, attains the level of Nishta, he can act as a savior of the fallen souls to some extent. He can rescue them from the ocean of birth and death. Bhajahure mana shinandanandana abhayacharanara sindure. So this is this compassion is you could say the flip side of tolerance. If you have a coin, it has two sides, heads and tails. We call it heads and tails. So one side is tolerance. The Gaudiya Vaishnava coin has two sides. One side is tolerance and the other side is compassion. So the Nishtita Bhakta, he will display the qualities of humility and tolerance and compassion. So that's why that he's thinking like this. The thoughts of an offenseless chanter, the thoughts of someone on Nishtita Bhakti, Nishta, who has attained the quality of Nishta, he'll be thinking, oh, look at my family members. They're engrossed in Maya. How will they be delivered? And then when he thinks of that, then this verse comes to his mind. Harinam, 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 Evakeval. Only by Harinam, Harinam. Somehow they have to get the holy name. I give them a cassette and they can listen to it, or I chant, or somehow they have to hear the holy name and accept the holy name and ultimately serve and surrender to the holy name. When we read this comment by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we remember an anecdote of Srila Prabhupada that I don't know if it's Hari Sauri is recounting or Shruti Kirti. Or one of Prabhupada's secretaries recounted this anecdote of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was driving in the car from the airport to the temple, somewhere going to the temple, traveling and preaching, or going for his morning walk before Bhagavatam class. And he looked out the window of some major city in America. He looked out the window and he saw many young people. This was in the 70s, like 1973 or 2 or so. And they were young people, but they were all in old clothes and not very clean or very kempt. And they were just lying on the sidewalks and they're all maybe on drugs or whatever. And looking in not a very happy or very healthy or sanitary condition. And Prabhupada was looking out the window. He was chanting japa, sitting in the back seat of the car, and he's looking out the window, and as they were going down the street, maybe in New York City or somewhere, and he was seeing all these unfortunate people of Kali Yuga, Manda Samanda Matayo, Manda Padrata. And then he was whispering something to him, he was just saying something, and then the secretary noticed that Prabhupada would often do the same thing. He would look out the window and he would see people that were suffering, see young people or other people suffering in various conditions, and then he would whisper something. So then the servant asked him, he said, what are you saying, Prabhupada? And the Prabhupada said, I'm saying Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam, kaloha nasteva, 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 gatiranyata. But seeing the deplorable and despicable condition of these people, Prabhupada was thinking, how can they be saved? How can they be delivered? How can they come to a life of happiness and joy? And then he was immediately came out of his heart, the only way that they can become happy and joyful is by Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam, by taking the holy name. So that would, of course, give Prabhupada great enthusiasm to preach and spread the holy name to every town and village. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is recounting the same thing in his commentary on Shikshastakam. Devotees absorbed in chanting the holy name never ask anything for themselves from anyone else in this world. So here, what we see here is the acharyas, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this section of this third verse of the Shikshastakam, he's saying, Taroiva Sahishnata. He's saying that, he's using this tree analogy, because the tree has this wonderful quality of tolerance and at the same time exhibiting compassion. So all the acharyas are saying, oh, our Lord, our Mahaprabhu, he's using this, he's bringing this analogy in his teachings. He's given 8 teachings Shikshastakam, which summarizes everything, Sambandha Gyan Abhideya Prayojana, the whole totality of Vaishnav Siddhanta, Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta is contained in the Shikshastakam, Chaito Dhavana Marjanam. So in this third verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, and this is the only verse, let's think about the verses now together, and I think it's the only verse where there's an analogy, right? And now comparing something, he's talking about, isn't it? I think if you think of all the verses. Well, no, there's one verse, and, you know, Yugaya Tandamesha, Pravisham, like rainfall, it's like there's some analogy about monsoon rains. Yeah, a speck of dust. There's a speck of dust, there's the monsoon rains, then there's the tree. There's a few analogies in the Shikshastakam. But this is a very important one because this is crucial, because this analogy is what will, how much we understand this analogy, how much we enter into the meaning of this analogy is how quickly we cross over the ocean of anarthas and come to the platform of nishta. So in this analogy is the secret of nishtita bhakti. And this analogy is the hint on how to rise above the ocean of anarthas and aparads and come to the platform of chanting without offenses. So therefore, all of our acharyas are taking different angles based on what Mahaprabhu said, this idea of the combined qualities of tolerance and compassion. So as the tree just stands there, it gives shade, it gives its bark, it gives its leaves, people pick the leaves. If it's a mango tree or a shok tree, people will come at different auspicious festivals and rip off a bunch of leaves and string them on a string to put across their doorways for some auspicious event. And the tree doesn't say, "Oh, what are you doing? You're ripping all my leaves off." It doesn't complain. It gives all its leaves. Or in the winter time, it's so much snow is hanging on the tree, and still it doesn't complain. "Oh, please, somebody take this snow off my branches or this ice off my branches." There's no complaining. So like a tree, Bhaktisanta Saraswati is saying, the devotee absorbed in chanting the holy name, he never asks anything for themselves from anyone else in this world. Because the Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha is the Rasa Vigraha. The holy name is the form of all rasa. Rasa means pleasurable tastes, mellows, feelings, love. So everyone will agree that you can't exist in this world without love. You can exist for some time, a long time without food. You can exist for some time without water. You can exist for a shorter time without breath, maybe a couple minutes without air. But you can't exist for 1 second without love. Because actually at every moment we're receiving the love of God. God's love is upon us at every moment. We may not perceive it, but if He withdraws our love, then our existence is annihilated. So it is love is the basic common denominator of life and reality itself. So the devotee who's chanting the holy name, he doesn't ask for anything from anyone. Oftentimes people, they go to saintly persons and they say, "Oh, I want to do some service. Can I do some service?" And he says, "There's no service here. There's nothing to be done here. Chant the holy name. You do this service. Chant the holy name. This will be good for you. This will be good for me. And this will be good for the whole world. If you come over here and you wash my clothes, that may be good for me and may be good for you. But it won't be good for the whole world. But if you chant the holy name, it will be good for me and good for you. And every sound that's vibrated, according to Srila Prabhupada, quoting from some Brahman, every sound that's vibrated goes around the world 7 times. So when you say, Hari Bo, it goes, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. And around, and around, and around, and around. So washing clothes doesn't go around the world 7 times. You just go, whoosh, 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 ring, 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 and that's it. You know, it's 5 minutes, it's finished. So we will see that in the society of Vaishnavas, it's very, very difficult to render service, this Bapu Seva, personal service. especially with advanced devotees, they're very adamant. In fact, even if you attempt to serve them, they become rather angry, almost to the point of violence. When Narottam Das Thakur came to Vrindavan on the impulse of, or the impetus of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his swapna, he ordered him to come to Vrindavan and take shelter of Lokanath Goswami. So Narottam came here and he thought he had all so many ideas and desires to render service to his would-be mentor and guru, Sri Lokanath Goswami. But when he got here, he found that Lokanath Goswami was unapproachable, something like a king's fort. A king's fort is surrounded by electric barbed wire fences and then a big moat of water full of alligators, and then a huge 50-foot wall, and then all kinds of, you know, boiling oil in the rafters, and it's impossible to get through to a king's fort. So the fortress of resistance of a Vaishnava is so great, you can't get through to render any service. He won't take any service from anyone. He won't accept any service from anyone. So Lokanath was like that. It was impossible for Narottam to render any service. So he was thinking, because he couldn't get into the fort to serve the king. But then he thought, oh, but the king must come out of the fort at least once a day, because he's eating once a day. So I know that he must come out of the fort at least once a day. So he came out once a day to the field to pass stool. So there, in that place, I will render service secretly. So Narottam hid over there. First he observed that when the king would come out of the fort, when that king of the Vaishnavas, Lokanath Goswami, when he would come for passing in the morning, and then he would go to that place and sweep that place and clean it for 1 year. One whole year. He served for 1 year, because this is actually the injunction, the Vedic injunction, that one should serve Guru, do humble service to Guru for 1 year, and somehow attract his attention and his heart, and in that way, Guru may be merciful. And moreover, it's a little more intimate than this type of service. Generally, one lives in the Guru Kul, in close association with the Guru, rendering Vani Seva and Vapu Seva. He's serving the teachings and instructions of the Guru. He's also serving the personal body of the Guru by cooking, by massage, by cleaning, etc. And this way, he can perceive, he can understand, I'm receiving the teachings from the spiritual master, and they're entering my heart, and they're transforming me. And by rendering Vapu Seva, by touching the body of this liberated soul, I feel some energy coming inside of me. By his words in my ears, I feel electrified, and by the touch of his body, I also feel something extraordinary. Because the body of Vaishnava is not material. It's totally spiritualized. So when one massages or touches the body of an advanced devotee, he also feels transformation. He also becomes purified. So Vapu Seva is something very, very powerful. But very few get the opportunity to serve the body of a liberated soul. It's a rare, rare fortune. But both ways, both contacts, Vapu Sparsha and Vani Sparsha, to touch the instructions of the spiritual master and touch his body, are both extremely purifying. Jiva Goswami explains in his commentary on Nectar Devotion that of the two, Vapu Seva is more important, especially in the beginning. Well, the general in ISKCON, they say, just serve the instructions of the spiritual master, get out there and preach. But actually, Jiva's commentary on this part about says, Vishrambena Gurur Seva. Vishrambena Gurur Seva, in the 64 limbs of devotion, this is number 3. First is Guru Parashraya, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Guru. And then Shiksha Dikshadi, taking Shiksha and then Diksha. Number 4 is Vishrambena Gurur Seva, to serve very intimately and very personally. And Jiva Goswami says, it's very, very important for the neophyte devotee to serve the personal body of the spiritual master, especially in the neophyte stage, in order to get that intimate connection and that tremendous purification. Because how much can he hear when he first comes? He can't digest or understand the tattva, the non-tattva, the prema tattva, but he can rub the guru's legs. He can rub the guru's legs after Giriraj Parikrama, and by touching his chitdeya, he can get the shakti, he can get purified in a very tangible, literally tangible and easy form. Our own Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, said, "I didn't understand very much what my spiritual master was saying." It's Prabhupada's own words. His talk was very high. I couldn't understand very much, but I knew it was good for me to listen. So this is further proof that the Vani, if you're serving the Vani or the teachings or the instructions, it may be a little difficult to absorb it, understand it, and react upon it, and obtain the sufficient response of purification. But then again, it's a very, very rare fortune to get Vapuseva. So the devotee, he doesn't ask anything for themselves, for himself, I should say, from anyone else in this world. Even if others bear malice or envy towards them or commit violence, which is like cutting the branches. Like cutting the branches of the tree is the same as I already mentioned. Someone speaks badly about you or curses you or condemns you. "Oh, you Hare Krishnas, you bum, you parasite. You're a parasite. You're just out here ripping people off. Get a job, you worthless. You should be arrested. You this, that, and the other thing." And they say so many wonderful, you know, verses and stutis and stavas when you're out there on the streets of these Mlecha Yavana cities distributing Prabhupada's books. You're doing the holiest of activities with the purest of intention, and people will come and say the most the foulest language they can command and produce. So as Jesus said, turn the other cheek, this cheek and that cheek. Slap me on this cheek, toom. Oh, that's nice. Okay, now this one. Oh, that's very, very good. They slap me on one cheek, then turn the other cheek. It's tolerance. Jesus also showed an extreme example of tolerance. That's practically his whole lila, especially the crucifixion lila is one of tolerance. "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they've done." So tolerance means compassion. Compassion means forgiveness. You can't be compassionate unless you're forgiving. So, this is the heart of the Vaishnava. Even if others bear malice or envy or hatred towards the devotee, or they commit violence to the devotee, which is like cutting the branches of the tree, the devotee never retaliates, nor does he adopt a vengeful attitude. Vengeful means revenge. I'll get back on you. You know, you did this to me. I'll follow you home and I'll break your arms and this and that. I know Kung Fu and I'm going to break you up. It's not like that. We should not think that the path will be very smooth. What path are we talking about? Path of bhakti, bhakti marg. Right? We should not think that the path of bhakti will be very smooth. Smooth sailing, as they say. So many troubles may come from outside. So many forms of hindrances and opposition will come try to dissuade us from the path of Dham Bhajan, Krishna Bhakti. We must practice forbearance, which is tolerance, like a tree. We should understand how insult, poverty, or other unfavorable dealings are necessary to purify us. So all of this is I can remember, this is a very common phrase in the early days of ISKCON that the various leaders would use. If you're facing some difficulty or disease, sickness, opposition, internal enemies or external enemies, the senior devotees would say, "Prabhu, it's purification, Prabhu, it's all purification." I don't hear this mantra much anymore. But this was very common. "Prabhu, it's purification." Okay, it's purification, but can you get me some aspirin? I have 105 fever, my head's splitting in half, and it's my bad karma, but I'm glad I'm getting purified, but at the same time, could you pass me a few aspirin? It's purification, Prabhu. Or you go out in Sankirtan, somebody... You know, and you're with a few devotees on Sankirtan, some demon comes up and pushes you on the ground and kicks you and rips all your books up and then, you know, cuts your seek off with a switchblade, like a big knife. And then he leaves you there in a pool of, frustration or whatever. And then your godbrothers come, "What happened?" "Oh, this big demon came. He cut off my seek with a knife. He pushed me in the ground, ripped all my books, and, punched me. And, oh, Prabhu, it's purification." "It's all purification, Prabhu." I said, "Oh, Jai purification." "I really feel purified." "I hope my seeking grows back." Sangirtan devotees, they can tell many a story to their great grandchildren when they sit around the fireplace in the ISKCON farm projects. They could weave many tales for the exciting pleasure of their grandchildren, the great Sangirtan warriors. "Well, son, back in 1970, when I was really, really granddad, it was like that. Yeah, it was like that." Because now, when the great grandchildren are coming about and jumping around ISKCON, they'll be thinking, "Oh, how is that? Everyone's chanting Hare Krishna everywhere. Everyone's wearing tilak, and you're telling all these ancient stories of wars and battles and demons and deprogrammers and this and that and guns." And I was a temple president, and people came by with guns and shot up the temple at 2:30 in the morning. I was there. I was temple president. Shotguns. And then the funny thing about it was that the same, because we had some idea of the car, and then next week the same people, those young people from the village, they came by again on a Sunday morning, and they parked in front of the temple. The temple is not like on a main road, and one of the brahmacharis said, "Maharaj, I think that's the same car." So I said, "Oh, go out there." And so this is a really funny story. So these young guys were like crazy, "Hey, the Hare Krishna." So they were out there, and so a few of the brahmacharis went out, and they were talking to them. When they looked, and they were talking, they looked like this, and they saw it lying by the sea. There was this shotgun. They were going to shoot some more, or maybe kill devotees or whatever, who knows what. So then I called the police, and two police cars came, from both sides of the highway. All these, and they had their own shotguns. And then they arrested these guys and put them in jail. So it gets pretty exciting over there. So you tell these kind of stories. Really, it's like that? Well, now everyone's chanting Hare Krishna. We would hope that would be the way the world turns. So this is all to purify us. Insult, poverty, and other unfavorable dealings are necessary to purify us. And with minimal punishment, we shall be released from material existence. So Krishna is arranging this punishment or this purification, and it's actually quite minimal. It's not very much. It's not very excessive. It's something we can tolerate it. We simply have to chant Hare Krishna, turn to Krishna, take shelter of his holy name, then we can tolerate whatever comes our way. Because whatever comes our way is arranged by him. It's all Krishna's mercy. Like the famous story Prabhupada tells of the minister and the king, and you must be knowing about the minister was very Krishna conscious, and he saw everything as Krishna's mercy. He was always saying, "Oh, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy." Every time the king, something good or bad happened, he would say, "Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy." So one day the king was practicing archery or something. He was doing some sword fighting or something, and somehow he got his thumb cut off. And then the story? And then the minister said, "Oh, this is Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy." How many know this story? So, and then the king, he would say, "Oh, Krishna's mercy, king, you got your thumb cut off." And then the king said, "Oh, you think it's mercy, I got my thumb cut off. It's not a very good thing, and you're making like it's a joke. Anyway, you go to the dungeon. You go to the prison. You go to the dungeon in the palace. Be locked up. And you eat water and black bread until I decide to let you free." And then the minister is saying, "Oh, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy, I'm going to the dungeon, I'm going to the prison." So then he went there. Then later, the king, as far as I can remember, he decided to go hunting by himself. So he went off on his horse and went hunting in the forest. And somehow he was caught by a group of dacoits. They were Kali Bhairava worshippers. So they caught him and they bound him up, the king. And they decide they would make an offering to Kali, Bhairava, a human offering. So first they have to bathe the sacrificial offering. So they bathe the king in a sacred or some river. And then they put him on the altar. They're going to chop his head off and offer his head to goddess Kali Bhairava. And then someone said, one of the priests or officiating persons there said, "Oh, wait. This offering is not perfect. Look, his thumb is missing. It has to have all the digits and fingers, everything. We can't offer a Kali imperfect person." So they release this king. So they slapped him up and beat him up a little bit and said, "Get out, Joe, go." So the king was saying, "Wow, Krishna's mercy. You know, and I can see the minister was right. It's really Krishna's mercy. I cut my thumb off. Otherwise, my head would have gotten cut off. So Krishna was so kind. He saved me with minimal punishment. You know, only my thumb got, losing my thumb a few weeks ago while practicing, you know, archery or sword fighting, I would save my whole life later when I got caught by these people." So he went back to the palace, to the dungeon, and he let out the minister. He said, "Minister, this thing happened, and I can see this. Now I understand what you're saying, Krishna's mercy. I got Krishna's mercy, I realize. But I don't understand, how is it, you're always saying Krishna's mercy, but how is it Krishna's mercy that you are locked in the prison? You've been there for 2 weeks. You're all skinny, you haven't eaten anything but some bread and water and no proper bathing, anything. So how is that Krishna's mercy?" And the minister said, "Oh, this is also Krishna's mercy. This is also Krishna's great mercy on me. Very great mercy on me. Because usually when you go hunting, I go with you. And if I was with you, when those dacoits caught you, they would have caught me too. And they would have seen that your body was imperfect because a thumb was missing. But I have my thumbs. So they would have put me down there on the altar and chopped my head off and offered me to goddess Kali Bhairava. So it's definitely Krishna's mercy that I was locked in your prison, so I wasn't there when you got caught." So like this, the minimal punishment. So the devotee accepts everything as Krishna's mercy, and whatever any difficulty or opposition we're facing here, we're told from the external environment, what to speak of opposition from the internal environment, is only very minimal. It's been extremely reduced by the mercy of the Lord. Sometimes the analogy I like to use is that, say we're destined to get shot in the head by a bullet, and maybe that's our destiny to get shot. But because we've surrendered or are attempting to surrender to Krishna, then what happens is the person points a gun at us, he shoots, and the bullet comes out at a rapid speed. And then Krishna is standing there. He's standing right beside us because he's always with the devotee. Then he sees the bullet coming. "Oh, this bullet is coming towards my devotee. He's supposed to get shot. He's supposed to die. Oh, this is not good." Then Krishna catches the bullet in his hand. He catches it. Then he takes it. Then he holds it in his hand. Then he goes up and goes like a little pebble. And you just feel something. Oh, okay. So, you know, it's coming as a speeding bullet, but Krishna intercepted it. So Krishna intercepts the karma, intercepts the karmic reactions for the devotee and reduces it. Prabhupada used to explain that if we're in the kitchen and we cut our finger, the devotee thinks, "Oh, this is Krishna's mercy. I'm so sinful. I'm so bad, and I deserve, my hand should have been cut off. But because I'm trying to cut the sabji for Krishna's offering, then Krishna reduced my karma, so only I got a little nick on my finger, a little cut on my finger, like this." So Krishna's giving us the minimal punishment to purify us and turn our face toward Him and to learn tolerance in the face of all opposition by taking shelter of the holy name and seeing everything as the mercy of the Lord. We must... we said that, okay. "And with minimal punishment we shall be released from material existence." I know one thing comes to mind that Vishnu John used to say. Devotees, maybe I've spoken this already, but it's similar. When devotees would come to India for the festival, Mayapur Vrindavan festival, some devotees would get malaria or typhoid or some flu or some sickness, diarrhea or whatever, some tropical disease. And they would be suffering. And then Vishnu John is very loving and heartly person, he would come around, the voice would complain, "Oh Maharaj, you know, we came on pilgrimage, we wanted to be with Prabhupada, and go on visit all the places. Now we're lying here, we're sick, and so much problem. And he would say, he would try to comfort them and the devotees, and he would say, we may be suffering something. You're suffering something, but you should think that it's a small price to pay. Whatever suffering, whatever inconvenience we're facing or experiencing in our devotional lives, it's a small price. It's a very small price to pay for attaining the great fortune of visiting the holy dham of Srimati Radharani, or the holy dham of Lord Gauranga, or Lord Jagannath. So, and then the devotees would actually, it was, and the way he said it, and so much feeling and genuine vibration behind it, devotees would feel quite uplifted in their spirits. Oh yeah, there's nothing. Typhoid, it's nothing. Hey, I'm in Vrindavan. I'm in Mayapur, Navadvipa. Wow, I'm so fortunate. After so many janams and janams of lakhs and lakhs of janams and births, and now, this is wonderful. Here I am. So, we should. It's something like the phrase "count your blessings," or you know what is that phrase? How's it? Count your blessings. What do they say? Count your something. You know that phrase, Srimati? Count your blessings. It's, in other words, instead of saying, "Oh, I only have 1 crore rupees," you know, I'm so poor. You should rather say, "Oh, I have 1 crore rupees. I actually have a lot." You know, and so we should think how much blessings we have. It comes to mind in Vrindavan about every 5 or 6 years. I tell this time to time in lectures. That's coming to mind. That every few years around in Vrindavan, there's one panda that operates in the Vrindavan area and takes all the people around to the holy places, Chirgad and Sringarbad and Goswami Mandirs. He's been there, you know, since his birth, obviously, but Vrishabhasi Brahman. So I bump into him when he's with a group of Bengalis or Yatris every time and again. And every time he sees me, he knows a little English, he says, "Oh, you're here! Very fortunate! You're very, very fortunate! You're very fortunate! You're a very fortunate man! Yes, yes!" And he has all kajal, you know how these Brahmins, he has all kajal on his eyes and chandan, and he's quite the figure to see. Quite the panda. And he's with all his jajaman and his followers. And he always says the same mantra. And then first couple of times he would say it, I would just laugh and think he was kind of, you know, was part of one of the scenes of Vrindavan. Then as the years would go on, I would keep bumping into him. Then I would start to think, actually, he's right. Actually, he's right. I really am fortunate. And only reason I have this fortune is because I have the Sri Guru Charanapati, you know, the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada have somehow been, you know, extended my way. And because of that, I received some fortune. And to the extent that Prabhupada has allowed us to come to his home, at least as a sightseer. So in that regard, we have to count our blessings and see that everything is actually very favorable for us. Through Krishna consciousness, we have connection with the highest fulfillment of life. What price are we ready to pay for that? So he's discussing this. Whatever little demands may be extracted from us, we must accept with a smiling face, remembering our highest goal. There's a very nice few phrases here. It's by Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Through Krishna consciousness, we have connection with the highest fulfillment of life. What price are we ready to pay for that? Whatever little demands may be extracted from us, we must accept with a smiling face, remembering our highest goal. Because we keep thinking, oh, someday I will live in the inner circle, amongst Radharani's inner circle of gopis and manjaris, with my Guru Sakhi, and I'll serve there in my spiritual body, in the land of Vrindavan, which is so beautiful, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book. It's full of fruits and flowers, and the birds are always singing there in 5 kinds of notes, and the waterfalls are always falling, and the air is carrying the aroma of various types of blooming flowers like lotuses and kumud and jui. So when we become enchanted by the goal, and we keep that in mind, then someone might come along and say, "Oh, you're going there? Oh, we have to demand a little tax here, a little Don Leela, Don Bihari. We have to extract. You have to pay a little something for that. Well, what is that? Oh, you have to stub your toe, and you have to get the flu, and you have to get some embarrassment, and you have to get insulted, and you have... extract it from me. Take it from me. Here's my wallet. Take out whatever the pay is. Take out from my mind. Take out from my heart. It doesn't matter, because I have my goal set. I'm going there, to that place. Okay, there's... I have to pay something. Okay, that's only natural. If you want to go to some resort, some very costly resort, and they offer all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things, you know, jacuzzi and skiing and sledding and swimming pool and this and that. So then you have to pay a good fee. If it's a good resort, then you have to pay a big fee because they give so many good things. Nice meals and good accommodations and a massage and a this and a that. So it's a big fee. So he said, okay, you take your fees, but give me the service, give me the result. So this is what is being told here. We have connection now through Krishna consciousness with the highest fulfillment of life. What price are we ready to pay for that? So it's such a great thing, but no, I'm not ready to pay anything for it. I want it free. I want it on discount. I want half price. Give me half price. No, this is fixed price shop. This is fixed price, no half price here. The price is fixed. The price is fixed for each devotee. So we have to pay the price. And then you get the goods, you get the commodity. So whatever little demands may be extracted from us, we must accept with a smiling face. Okay, Krishna. And that leads us to our next quote, which shows you the mentality of someone who has a smiling face when Krishna comes to extract some demands from him. All my friends have collected over here. Bhakta Fly, Bhakta Bird, Bhakta Dog, Bhakta Joe, Bhakta Mary, Bhakta Sunil, Bhakta Wolfgang, or whatever. German names, whatever. Bhakta Fritz, Bhakta Anna, Bhakta Preeti, Bhaktin Preeti. So there's Bhakta Fly, Maki is fly, Maki. Bhakta Maki, so many over here. So, whatever little demands may be extracted from us, we must accept with a smiling face, remembering our highest goal. There's a story about Gaurakishore in this regard. Once in Navadvip, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was doing madhukari. That means going to a few Brahmins' houses and begging for some small bit of prasad, usually some roti or some small prasad. While he was doing that, performing madhukari, some of the boys of Navadvip, they pelted him with stones. In other words, they were throwing stones at him, and they started throwing dirt on him. At that time, Gaurakishore said, "Krishna, you're cruelly dealing with me. I will complain to Mother Yashoda about you." So, just see, he was seeing these boys of Navadvip, and this isn't like 100 years ago. They're pelting him. Pelting means rather forcefully throwing stones at him and throwing dirt all over him. And he's saying, "Oh, Krishna, you're being so cruel to me, throwing dirt and stones at me. I'm telling your mother, I'm going to complain to Mother Yashoda about you." That was his outlook, and thus he harmonized everything. We should learn to see Krishna in anything that comes to disturb or attack us. We should learn to see Krishna in anything or anyone that comes to disturb or attack us. Acha, Krishna, you're coming. Agasura is coming. Agasura is coming to swallow me up. What is this, Krishna? I will complain to Mother Yashoda. I will complain to your mother Yashoda about you, Gaurakishore said. Advanced devotees are always established in the consciousness that Krishna is behind everything. Right? In other words, see Krishna's hand in everything. Even the Christians have that idea. It's not something new to we Christian, of Christian background. It's a very common teaching that all young Christians learn. See the hand of God in everything. Isn't it? You must have heard that 1,000 times growing up. See the hand of God. Or they have the phrase, it was some poet or something that Prabhupada used to quote. It's not actually from the Bible, it's some poet. Longfellow, I think it was Longfellow or something. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord, or the sanction of the Lord. It's not the Bible, it's actually a poem, but Prabhupada would quote that. So, advanced devotees are established in the consciousness that Krishna is behind everything, and they take everything that way. This attitude is our beacon light. Beacon light is like it's a light for guiding ships. It's on the beach, on any coastline of a country that has an ocean, and there's a big light on it, and a big tower with a light on it, so that the ships at the ocean can find out where the shore is. So it's called beacon light. So you're in the darkness, you're in your ship, out in the sea in the darkness, and you don't know where the land is, you don't know if you're not navigating correctly, then you see the beacon light. So the beacon light, oh, there's the land, point the ship there, and my ship will come to the safe harbor. I can harbor there and tie my ship down and get off the ship and go on the land. So the beacon light is a very important and significant analogy. So this attitude is our beacon light. In other words, it's our guiding light. It's putting us and pointing us in the right direction, and it's attracting us out of the darkness, and it's showing us the way to safety and shelter, the shelter of a safe harbor. This attitude is our beacon light, for it will guide us to adjust ourselves to those things which are apparently unfavorable to us. A sweet adjustment is found there. So this is the whole basis of Krishna consciousness at the level of nishtha, is that one becomes very expert, because he's steady, he becomes very expert at adjustment and harmonization, at harmony and adjustment. And how he becomes expert at adjustment and harmony is because he has developed these four qualities of humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for all. Because to develop these qualities, one has to become very fixed in the chanting of Nam Bhajan. And then Sri Nam Prabhu will give the ability to harmonize and adjust everything. A sweet adjustment is found there. The example of a tree is the limit of humility. A devotee should practice tolerance like the tree, serving even those who harass, hurt, or insult him without being angry with anyone. In Bhajan Rahasyam, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this principle in text 4 of Tritiyam Sarana. One should be tolerant like a tree and compassionate to all jivas. This is from Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Verse 12, Brahmaji's Prayers. Nati prasidati tato pachito parache tato pachare ararita suraganeriri bhandakamhe yatsava bhuttadaya yasad alabhya yeko nana jane savatnita suradantaratma. He's saying translation. O Bhagavan, you are situated in the hearts of all living entities as the supremely benevolent super soul. Because of your compassionate nature, you always remain pleasing to everyone, but you cannot be attained by the non-devotees. And then there's a Bengali version of this by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bahu upacharapane pujikami devagane prasanata nad labe tomar sarvabhute dhaya kari Bhaji Akhilatma Hari, Tare Kripa Tamara Apar. Demigods worship you with many opulent offerings, but they are motivated by personal desire. Thus, you are not pleased with their puja. You are in the heart of all creation. Therefore, you give unlimited mercy to those who are compassionate to all living entities. Sarvabhuta Daya Kori, Bhaji Akhilatma Hari, Tare Kripa Tomar Apar. Apar means unlimited, Kripa Apar, Tomar. So this is a great, this again brings us to this conception of the tree, of having these dual qualities of tolerance, which the verse Trinadapi addresses, but an additional quality which is included practically from the viewpoint of the Acharya is tolerance and compassion go side by side. Because the devotee is suffering, as we mentioned, various opposition due to his own karma or the arrangement of the Lord. He suffers, and he comes out of that suffering by taking shelter of the holy name. He tolerates, he takes shelter of the holy name, he tolerates that suffering, and then he comes to proper position of adjustment and harmony and peace and happiness by exercising his tolerance and chanting the holy name. And then, at the same time, then he looks around, he sees others. Oh, others are also suffering like I was suffering. And they don't have this secret. They don't have this secret of tolerance and the holy name. So then he has, then the compassion arises within him, and he wants to distribute the holy name to them so that they can also learn tolerance in the face of difficulty by turning to Krishna and taking shelter of the holy name. So tolerance and compassion are, you see, they're coming up all the time here. So what happens here, that the devotee, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, that Krishna is very pleased with someone that exercises compassion by preaching. He's saying, Krishna is in the heart of every atom. He's in the heart of every atom. He's in the heart of all creation, in the atoms and the human beings and all the creatures. So if he sees that, oh, you're going forward to some conditioned soul to give them Krishna consciousness, then Krishna is recognizing that. He's observing that. He's witnessing that. And it gives him great pleasure that you're trying to help them by expressing your compassion. And then what does Krishna do in return? Tare Kripa Tamara Upar. He gives unlimited mercy. So we see that, and this was the example of Nityananda. Sri Nityananda Prabhu, he was a preacher. And of course, he was preaching on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was so tolerant. He was hit in the head by this Jagai Madhai. And yet he didn't say, oh, you hit me in the head, I'm going to kick you. I'm going to kill you. No, he said, no, anyway, you hit me in the head, take the holy name. But Lord Chaitanya was rather intolerant. Oh, you offended my devotee. I will take my chakra. But then the merciful Nityananda, he interceded on behalf of the conditioned soul. He said, no, my Lord, please, your patita pavan avatar, you must deliver them. So this is this mood of tolerance and compassion is very much embodied by Nityananda Prabhu. So if we don't have much tolerance and we don't have much compassion, then we should certainly take shelter in Nityananda to develop these qualities. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives one tikka on this verse. And he says, and this is prayers by Brahma. He says, O Lord, you make yourself freely available to the devotees who worship you without any personal desire. But those who worship you with fruit of desires don't get your blessings so easily. So it's interesting because the demigods, which were mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, many classes of devotees, Sakama Bhaktas, that have calm, that have desire, they're with desire, they worship Krishna to get fulfillment. And Krishna fulfills, sometimes, generally fulfills, but he's not very happy with it. He's not very happy, he's not very pleased. But devotees, because they have motive, they're not pure in their love. Their love is actually really not love, it's more like business. But devotees worship the Lord to please the Lord, to make the Lord happy. That's why we're chanting Hare Krishna, that's why we're performing bhakti. That's the pure motivation. Sometimes people say, oh, I'm chanting Hare Krishna because it makes me feel good, or I want to get purified, or I want to... But this is not really the purest attitude towards the chanting of japa. It's bhajan, it's bhakti bhajan, which means to please the Lord, to act in such a way to make Krishna happy. Krishna likes to hear the holy name. He likes to hear us. It gives him pleasure. It gives him happiness. All the limbs of bhakti. So we perform them for his pleasure. And we worship him because it's enjoined in the shastras that he is happy to receive the worship. And when he's happy, when he's pleased with our worship because we don't want anything, then he gives so much mercy to us. We see that devotees, generally, the sincere devotees, the karmis or non-devotees, they're working so hard and they're endeavoring in so many ways to collect money, and also they even worship the Lord, pious Christians and others, they worship the Lord to attain money or finances, and they maybe get, but with great endeavor. And devotees are busy simply trying to please the Lord, engage in bhakti, and money's coming automatically, pretty much. Like one lady that came here, she said, oh, I want to come to Kartik to be in Radhakund, but I didn't have any money.
I didn't have any money and I live far away. I was thinking, how will I get there?
And then the next day somebody came and gave me $1,000. $1,000 is not easy to get unless you rob a bank or something. You have to work a few hours to get it, at least, depending on your qualification and talent, what you do, or maybe even a week or several days. So she was thinking, that's not possible. But she's a sincere devotee and trying to just serve the Lord without personal motivation, chant and serve the temple in her country. Then someone said, oh, I heard, you haven't been in India in so many years. I heard you very much want to go. I have some money. I'll give you $1,000. So that happens so many times to devotees that Krishna takes care of them. He's pleased. So he gives his mercy. We worship without motivation and Krishna gives his mercy. And the karmis, the fruit of workers, they worship God also, or Vishnu especially, or demigods. But when they worship the Lord, then he's not very happy because they're selfish. They're not really worshiping with pure heart. Let's see. Any questions on this point? Because we'll go to Amani. We can start Amani. Amani na. Amani de na. A devotee never asks anything from anyone, but rather donates whatever he can give to others, patiently tolerating all the pains they may give him. Haridas Thakur was beaten in 22 marketplaces, but he was always praying for the welfare of his tormentors. A very nice section in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Haridas Thakur, the example of tolerance, that he was being beaten to death. The order was, take him from marketplace to marketplace and cane him with bamboo sticks, beat him until he dies, one after the other, drag his body. And he was just praying, oh my Lord, please forgive them. They don't really know what they're doing. Of course, it's a long story. Lord Chaitanya came there and he put his back on Haridas's back, and Lord Chaitanya actually took the beatings on his back, which he showed at another pastime. But nevertheless, the mood of Haridas was this, you know, that, oh, okay, I'm so unfortunate. I have such a low birth, and I have allowed offenses to the Lord and the Lord's devotees to enter my ears. So this is the proper punishment for me, that I should be beaten in 22 marketplaces, beaten to death. And anyway, I tolerate that. Let them beat me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Oh, my Lord, but please be kind to them. Don't retaliate against them. Don't take revenge. Don't beat them and don't hurt them. They're just carrying out the order of the king. They're really good guys after all. they're quite good guys. And ordinarily they wouldn't do this, but they're under order from the king, so. Question? Anything? So we have so many wonderful examples of tolerance. I mean, the Chaitanya Bhagavad especially is a shastra full of, it very much describes the qualities and behavior of the Vaishnava in action, the Gaudiya Vaishnava. There's so much discussion in there about behavior and acting and feeling and thinking as a devotee. That's very much, that's why it's so much appreciated by the masses of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's in very simple poetic language, and it discusses, you know, the day-to-day basics of Gaudiya Siddhanta behavior, and devotees exhibiting the qualities of tolerance and all the good qualities, and different scenes where the offenses are made and how they're responded. It's very much, whereas Chaitanya Charitamrita is so much deep tattva and siddhanta, so they go very well together. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is very, 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 very deep and very, 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 very subtle philosophy. So the masses of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, at least among the Bengalis, they prefer Chaitanya Bhagavat because it's more stories. It's like stories. It's like Mahabharata versus Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata, but people kind of skip over that and get to the stories. The masses of people read the Mahabharata and not the Bhagavad Gita. And we are just the opposite. We read the Bhagavad Gita, not the Mahabharata. Or maybe we read both, I don't know. So the most of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they read Chaitanya Bhagavat. And if you go anywhere and there's any recitation going on in public of one of these two books, generally it's Chaitanya Bhagavat. Because it's very hard to enter some large parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita because it's the Madanakya Mahabhava of Radharani. So it's a little inaccessible to the average bhakta. Bhakta B and Bhakta Dog and the rest of us. So this word Amanida, of course we're all familiar to some extent with Man. We heard of Man, Manini Radhe. Manini is a name for Radharani, and there's Man Kutir and Barsana, and Man is a type of sulking or pouting or transcendental jealousy, or it's not really anger, it's a type of love and separation. Where even you're in the presence of the beloved, you have a certain feeling due to different circumstances, some with a cause and some without a cause, by which you display an unfavorable attitude or non-receptivity to the advances of the beloved. And man is generally shown by the nayaka. This is not so much the nayaka. The nayaka displays man. It's a type of love. Viparlamba Prem, a type of love and separation, and it's extremely tasty and pleasurable to the Nayak. The hero very much appreciates when the heroine plays hard to get. Basically is what it's like. So this word comes up because, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of Radharani, and the Shikshastakam does culminate with Mahabhav. Madanakya Mahabhava Srimati Radharani and Ashlishiva Padratam Panashtamam verse. So therefore, some rays of that prema and rays of that love must filter down through the other verses as we approach the lotus feet of Radharani and Mahabhav in the last shloka of Shikshastakam. Just like when the sun, before that we see the disk of the sun, the sky starts becoming lighter. We see some, again, the darkness starts to recede and the light starts to increase in the sky. We say, oh, the sun is coming. And then we see more light and we see some rays coming over, and then finally. So this word comes up here in the third verse, Amanina, Amani. So man means respect, self-respect. So Amani means to be free. It means, man also implies a sense of pride. That Radharani displays a very proud mood. You were supposed to come last night and meet me, but you didn't come, and now you come at sunrise with the obvious signs of having enjoyed with another gopi. And then, so Radharani, she becomes very proud and very distant, and she starts it's called love sulk. She starts pouting and showing an unfavorable attitude, turns away from Krishna, she won't look at him, and then he comes in front of her and she turns the other way, and she tells, get out from here, and all these things. So Amani means to be prideless, to be free from man, to not be in man. The absence of false prestige. This is one of the symptoms of a offenseless chanter. This is the third symptom of an offenseless chanter of the holy name. Amani, Amanina, what do you say? Amanina, Manidena. Kirtaniya Sundari. Amani means to be free from false ego, which arises from identifying with one's beauty, high birth, social status, strength, wealth, etc. One who is freed from false ego can realize his real identity and fix his mind exclusively on the lotus feet of Krishna and chant Hari Nam constantly. So man, in one sense, man is goes all the way not only to pride, but it goes all the way to the idea of false ego. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that because of one becomes proud of his beauty or proud of his wealth, and due to that intoxication of pride, then he identifies, oh, I'm so wealthy, I'm a wealthy man, I can do anything, I can say anything, I can control anyone, I can buy anyone with my money, the rich people say like that. I can buy the prime minister with my money. The industrialists, they buy entire prime ministers. In India, it's very prevalent. Some big industrialist says, oh, I want to have this bill passed or that bill passed to favor my company or to favor... So they go to the prime minister, you can make this bill, you can pass this bill? And they say, and the prime minister says, well, how much will you give me? And he says, well, I'll give you 1,000,000 crores. Okay. And then he puts it in his pocket, and then sometimes they get caught. This happened with Narasimha Rao, Prime Minister of India, some years ago. The people that were making weapons, they bribed him, so then he signed a big contract with India with some weapons company. It's called Bofors or something like that. A big cheating. Rich people, they become proud, become intoxicated with their pride, this man. All I am is a factory wala. I have a few rupees in my pocket, but I can control the Prime Minister of India, who's the second biggest country in the world. There's 1 billion people here. I just put a few rupees in his pocket, and I can make him dance like a puppet. So then they become very proud. Money or beauty, someone's Miss India or some Miss Universe or whatever they have, Miss Galaxy or... You know, the most beautiful lady in the whole, you know, material universe or something, you know, Miss Universe. And then, wherever she walks, everybody takes her picture, and she's on the cover of every magazine and every newspaper and every soapbox and toothpaste tube and everything else. And so she thinks she's something very special, and people faint when they see her. And so this is pride of beauty. It's all false ego. This is man. Pure devotees never think themselves as gurus. They don't even think that they're Vaishnavas. They consider themselves disciples of everyone in the world and the most fallen and insignificant of all. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's known for, even when his disciples would come and pay obeisances, he would return and pay obeisances to them. I mean, he was the walking encyclopedia, the spiritual encyclopedia, the singer guru, who had memorized the Bhagavad Gita at the age of 4 and the Bhagavatam 18,000 verses by the time he was 10 and or whatever. He was like unbelievable, phenomenal intelligence and position, and Nashtik Brahmachari, never married, and sannyasi, and author of, and founder of so many Gaudiya Mas and pure devotee, and his disciples would pay obeisances, and he would say, oh Prabhu, he would address, oh Prabhu, you are my Prabhu, they say, oh Gurudev, and he would say, oh Prabhu, you are my master, I must show respect to you. So he's saying that a pure devotee never, this is his comment, part of his comment on this word Amani. So he's trying to say it, in other words, we're talking about Nishta, that one of the qualities of Nishta, which is a long way from pure devotion, or being a pure devotee, but one who is a Nishta, he will have this quality of being a Mani. So we hear that the pure devotee, who's completely free from any drop of pride, he's thinking, he never thinks himself even as a guru or even as a Vaishnava. He considers himself a disciple of everyone in the world and the most fallen and insignificant of all. Knowing that, Krishna, knowing that Krishna lives within the heart of every living entity, and knowing that Krishna is inside of every atom, pure devotees never consider themselves superior to anyone or anything. So it's over time, so we'll stop there. So that's an interesting meditation to develop a sense of pridelessness, that Krishna is in everyone's heart and every atom. So how can I not but respect every object and every person with the utmost regard and utmost care and concern? Because my Lord, my Krishna, God Himself, is in every atom of every object. Those devotees that were closely associated with Prabhupada, they would often remark how he would handle the material energy. They would sit with Prabhupada in his room conversation, and he would have his glass case, and he would say, "Where's my glass case?" And he'd say, "Prabhupada, it's on your desk." "Oh." Then Prabhupada would so respectfully pick up his glass case, and then not only with great, and then take out his glasses, and then no worries, we go, okay, we open a thing, and we throw the material energy here and there, we kick things and this and that, but Krishna's in every atom, Krishna's in the atom of this glass case, and Prabhupada would pick, they would remark that the disciples that served Prabhupada, they said we watched how he moved, because we were with him 24 hours a day, and there was some special way, his consciousness was pervading, his Krishna consciousness was moving, and everything was moving, and his Krishna consciousness was expressed in everything he said and everything he did, and every object that he contacted, he expressed his Krishna's consciousness. It wasn't like and throw this here and throw that there, and he was like very, very careful and respectful. "Oh, this is Krishna's in this glass case, and these eyeglasses, Krishna's here," and not like, "Oh, here." Everything was very deliberate. Very deliberate and very respectful and very Krishna conscious. And the devotees, as they would watch Prabhupada just move, bathing and brushing his teeth or anything that he did, it emanated such a careful care for all the objects, having this vision which we're saying that knowing that Krishna lives within the heart of every living entity and within every atom, the pure devotees never consider themselves superior to anyone or anything. So if I have this glass case, and I'm not thinking that Krishna is within the atoms of this glass case, then I'll think, "I'm superior to this glass case." "Oh, this glass case, that's nothing." Then I'll take my glass and go, "Poof!" I'll just fling it on the table. Because I'm superior. This is only a glass case. Plastic thing. I'll throw it. But if I'm thinking, "Oh, this glass case is superior to me. Krishna's in the atoms of this glass case. I must be very careful. This is superior to me. This is better than me." It's very nice to think. Of course, you can't imitate this. I'm a Sharanam Karma, because we're kind of gross, and we're in our dealings and our thinking and our what to speak of our Krishna consciousness is so minute that we throw everything around. Something's in the way, and we just kick it, and we're kind of like a bull in a china shop. we're not refined, because our consciousness is not refined, so therefore our dealings and actions are not refined. But when our consciousness is refined and purified by the contact of Krishna and the presence of Krishna, then all of our speech and actions, that is what is being told in the very basic book of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna asks Krishna, "How does a transcendentalist speak? How does a transcendentalist sit? How does a transcendentalist walk and act?" Well, these are some of the ways which we've described. Vachanahasya.